Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I haven't even been back for 24 hours in this Kafka novel you call Chicago, and I already blew at least one tire, maybe two, on the ride in this morning.
That outbound Kennedy, that construction is pretty brutal. And they have new traffic patterns every day. And it was it the part where it was unpaved? Is that where you blew the tire?
Right by the Arlington Heights Road exit.
Oh, there you did? Did you run over here? Or did you just ride in on the rims?
I
like a man. Come on, I've ridden out on the rims.
I managed my way in. It's just so punishing. And that was after being treated upon my return to this vaudeville act with the bearded lady and the fat man. Oh, those are elected officials, I guess, here. Chicago's reopened. 25%, 50%.
Apparently. Trouble.
All right, Chicago. Let's reopen.
Hey! I didn't know we were having a party. I mean...
There's nobody there.
I know.
It's like her in the press corps.
I know. Well, some invited guests, but she was supposed to have the microphone was supposed to be on in this big, okay, Chicago, let's reopen. But the microphone didn't work.
Did everybody have lunch at Reese's?
No, but guess what we did get offered?
A ride on the Sea Dog?
A ride on the Ferris wheel. They came up to me afterwards like, ma'am, excuse me. I go, oh, no, my name's Amy. We're offering rides on the Ferris wheel. Would you like to have one? I'm like in a car by myself. No, I'm okay. Because of social distancing, you couldn't be with anybody. So you'd have Mary and Ahern in one pod. And I mean, it was so ridiculous. Mm. But I thought of you because
a Ferris wheel for all of the Chicago press corps at the bottom of Lake Michigan. A good start.
312-642-5600 turnkey.pro answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Because
50% capacity at restaurants, 25% capacity at conventions and sporting events, mm-hmm. and Benny the Bull and other mascots were there, along with the Rona Busters. Since they're all cartoon characters, they might as well travel in groups. So this is super exciting.
Well, no, and also this, you know, another push. If you don't get the vaccine, you don't have a life.
So if you want to travel with less hassle, get a vaccine. The travel order doesn't apply to you. You don't have to worry about quarantine. You don't have to worry about getting tested. You want to have a bigger wedding, which we've been hearing from a lot of you about. Make sure your guests get vaccinated and you can have a bigger wedding safely. You want to see even more fans at the United Center and at your favorite sporting event soon? Getting vaccinated is how we're going to keep turning that dial.
Honestly, if you're not, they're pitting two cultures against each other, the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, because there are people out there that do not want to get vaccinated for religious reasons and health reasons and for allergies. And you're not going to have a life, according to them. Like, what's in it for you? You know,
the people who aren't getting vaccinated, they're mostly the second class citizens here anyway. So, you know, you remain a second-class citizen. Maybe you get downgraded to third class. What's the
big
deal?
But they talk about equity all the time. A lot of people that aren't getting vaccinated are from the black and brown communities. So you're just going to let some white people in Wrigleyville go into the Cubs game, but, oh, I'm sorry, sir, you don't have your vaccination card. You can't come in. Because they're thinking about vaccination sections like they do at Dodger Stadium.
I mean, does anybody who lives as a second- or third-class citizen in Chicago mind? I don't think so.
I asked her about pitting people against each other. But a lot of people that cannot get vaccinated for religious reasons or because of allergies feel like you're creating two classes of citizens, a vaccinated class and an unvaccinated. So what rights will they have if they can't get vaccinated? Does that mean they can't have a large-scale wedding if their daughter gets married? Or
no,
I don't think so.
I mean, look, the reality is that there's all kinds of vaccinations, and they have been in the U.S. for 50, 60 years. So we've faced these challenges before. Some people, either, as you say, because of religious reasons or health reasons, can't.
I wasn't getting my answer. So, Dr. Wardy, can you help out, please?
So if you want to travel.
No, that's not it. Specifically for those who cannot get vaccinated for health reasons because they have food allergies. Can they get some type of. Anyway, but I asked Dr. Wardy. Basically, you don't. You'll be left out. They'll let 5% in or maybe 10% of unvaccinated people in. Is that a life you want to live?
I mean, do you want to live in Chicago?
No, I don't.
Well, I guess there's your answer.
But the thing is that 38 states don't live like this.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't know. Do you get tired of screaming into the darkness? I do.
Yeah, I get tired of banging my head against the wall. So, that's why I have an exit plan, like most normal people do.
So you know what it's going to be. We said this a year ago. Illinois will be the slowest to reopen, and that has been realized. I mean, you cannot set your expectations low enough for the political ruling class in Chicago and in Illinois. So
New York is opening full. July 1st, 100% capacity everywhere.
So if you know this is going to happen, then aren't you engaged in sort of the detestable virtue signaling you hate from the left when you pretend that you didn't know it was going to happen, when you get all morally indignant about it? I mean, we can point out the hypocrisy of it. We can point out how they're not following the science and data. We can point out the arbitrariness of these edicts. We can point out the motivations for the politicians. We can point out the public support that they have, which is why they continue in this direction. But I mean, can you really heap moral indignation on anybody other than yourself? Really? You said what was going to happen. Now it's happened. And now you're angry about it? You said it was going to happen. You knew it was going to happen. We all know how this plays out. Every time. And yet, oh, what the heck? What's going on around
New
here?
New York's open.
What do you
Las
mean?
Las Vegas Strip's open 100%.
What
strip
do you
clubs
mean
are open.
What's going on around here? What do you mean what's going on around here? How many decades do you have to live here for it to register? I can't believe what's happening in Chicago. You can't? Have you been here more than 5 minutes?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Sticking on Chicago for a minute, Mike Scott reporting on the indictment of Patrick Daley Thompson.
I didn't do it, though. It wasn't me.
The sun rises in the east, sets in the west. Another day, another Chicago alderman indicted, this time on bank fraud and tax charges. It involved, by the way, that failed bank, the Washington Federal Bank.
Oh, that one? Okay.
What do you know
well,
about
That's the Washington Federal Bank that they were involved in. What does he allegedly do?
Well, right. He's made false statements, allegedly, filed false tax returns, allegedly. But that Washington Federal Savings, there's like a $30 million embezzlement scheme before that bank failed like 4 or 5 years ago. And if you remember, one of the bank principals was this Park Ridge guy who committed suicide in his home that was somewhat questionable, the circumstances surrounding that suicide. But anyway.
Yeah, he took a $219,000 loan out, made one payment, then didn't pay the rest off.
So I'm all for indicting Daley's. So I would say Patrick Daley Thompson, good start. But please don't stop there, Northern District of Illinois. And I want to segue from that crime family to another one at the federal level. But Greg and LaGrange we'll get to first. Greg?
Hey, how are you today?
Good.
Dan,
he's great.
I used to have a lot of respect. I used to have a lot of respect for you, Dan. You came back. I got a question why.
Yeah, no. I understand. That is a fair critique.
A question for Amy, and I know it was a small snippet from what Mayor Lightfoot said, from what I could tell, but she said something, when you asked a question about people getting vaccinated, And the snippet was that, well, people have been, there have been vaccines for 50 or 60 years, was what I thought I heard the clip say. Was she trying to say, I want to give her full, you know, it was a small clip. I want to give her full disclosure on whether she was equating this vaccine with all the other vaccines that have
yes,
ever been released.
She was.
No.
No, you don't think
that's. No, that's not what she was saying, because the question was about religious or allergic exemptions. And she's like other vaccines in the past, we've dealt with that before, where you had to have a religious exemption, or religious exemption was an issue, or there was an allergic issue, there was another medical, competing medical health issue that had to be contemplated, and so there needed to be special dispensations. That,
right,
that's
but
what
are those
comparing.
People going to get a card or get a pass so that they can go to events? Because right now, this Vax Pass they're talking, you get preferred seating, and you get discounts on certain events if you have a
right.
vaccination.
I know, and you want your $5 discount at Supercuts, too. Yeah,
and I want my free Sam Adams.
That's going to be up to the city. I understand that, but thanks for disclosing that, because you know, I know Mayor Lightfoot takes a beating, and she deserves a lot of it sometimes, a lot of the time. But full disclosure of what she meant and what she said is really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have a great weekend, guys.
Thanks, Greg.
I just think she should leave the medical questions up to Dr. Awarde, you know?
What I mean, what's the difference? They say the same things.
Well, Dr. Awarde's a doctor. I mean, she knows a little bit more. She's a little more well-studied.
I only see two Rona busters.
Okay.
Jim and Crown Point.
You know, it's amazing how we are manipulated. You have a small percentage, which are the politicians, that are able to control us through fear. I was never vaccinated. My kids were never vaccinated. What we did was, when somebody had the measles or chickenpox, we'd all get together and get it at the same time.
Yep.
And it was over. It might sound radical, but my kids weren't vaccinated, and they had to leave school when there was an outbreak, and they never got sick. So I've learned to live away from society, and I could care less about going to a game. Why would I get vaccinated to watch teams that make me sick?
It's a great question.
That's a good question.
Thanks for the call, Jim. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, I want to get vaccinated so I can go watch the Bulls play basketball at the UC. Who's saying that?
Well, I don't know.
Probably not some of the players.
Yeah, wait, they're playing basketball? And the Blackhawks are happy they want fans back, and so that starts this week. But, of course, you have to show that you don't have to show that you've been vaccinated to get in this weekend if you want to go to the United Center.
Still 25%.
Yeah, it's 25%. Capacity. You got to wear a mask, 6 feet, blah, blah,
Forget
blah.
Forget it. Forget
you
it.
You know the routine.
It's annoying enough to wear for a two-hour flight. It's
can you imagine being in
ridiculous.
School? My kids, from 8 in the morning until they're done with volleyball at 6 o'clock at night, they're wearing a mask. It's child abuse, and I know I sound like Tucker Carlson, but their vision's going, they have headaches. I don't know what to do anymore.
We'll visit masks a little bit later on in the show, and Tony Fauci's pronouncements on it. But going back to the Daily Crime family,
yes,
we know all about political crime families locally, but I wanted to get to the crime family that is in office at present with the Joe Biden, the big guy, as the principal. So Rudy Giuliani went on Tucker Carlson, speaking of Tucker Carlson, went on his program yesterday to explain what happened when the feds came knocking, raiding his home and his office for electronic devices. Here's Rudy G. giving the details.
Well, about 6 o'clock in the morning, there was a big bang, bang, bang on the door. And outside were seven FBI agents with a warrant for electronics. And I looked at the warrant and I said, you know, this is extraordinary, because I've offered to give these to the government and talk it over with the government for 2 years. I don't know why they have to do this. The agents seemed somewhat apologetic, I might say. They were very, very professional and very gentlemanly. The only time they got perturbed is at the end of the surge, when they had taken about, I'd say, 7 or 8 electronic items of mine, which is what they took, and two of someone else's. They weren't taking the 3 hard drives, which, of course, are electronic devices. They just mimic the computer. I said, well, don't you want these? And they said, what are they? I said, those are Hunter Biden's hard drives. And they said, no. I said, are you sure you don't want them? I mean, the warrant required them to take it. And they said, no. And I, one last time, I said, don't you think you should take it? And they said, no. Now, Hunter Biden's hard drives fall within the scope of the subpoena. The subpoena required them to take all electronics, but they decided to leave that behind. And they also were completely content to rely on my word that these were Hunter Biden's hard drives. I mean, they could have been Donald Trump's. They could have been Vladimir Putin's. They could have been anybody's. But they relied on me, the man who had to be raided in the morning.
That's a really good point that he makes, awesome. That, you know, you're supposed to take all the electronic devices per the warrant and the subpoena. And he points to those electronic devices, they're hard drives. Those are Hunter Biden's laptop. We don't want those. Well, right. if I don't want you to take something that was mine, I would just say, I bet they don't want to take anything that I would describe as Hunter Biden's. So all the other stuff you're taking is also Hunter Biden. So you're going to take that?
Or maybe you shouldn't have just told them and see if they would have taken everything.
It's a really good point that he makes. So, of course, that prompts the question, well, what are on those Hunter Biden hard drives, Rudy?
The reality is the hard drive contains somewhere between a dozen or more violations of FARA that are spelled out completely, failure to register. The fact is it also spells out, as we now know, a clear violation of the Gun Act. The application is a straight out fraud. He says, I'm not an addict. We have a picture of him 5 days before smoking a crack pipe behind the wheel of a car and then saying under oath that he's not an addict. And it's the left that gets all perturbed about people who are mentally unstable having guns. Well, he was unstable. Unfortunately and tragically, I feel sorry for that part of Hunter Biden. I think his father exploited him. But the reality is he's still a danger to the public if he's driving an automobile or holding a gun. But they don't care about that.
And he went on to say a little bit more about what's on that hard drive.
Over and over again, 30 years of the Biden crime family violating our laws. That is what is on the hard drive that they have censored. And that's why they want to put me in jail.
Well, it may be the best thing that ever happened to Rudy Giuliani is this investigation into whether or not he failed to register as a foreign agent under the Foreign Agent Registration Act, which he's talking about there with respect to Hunter Biden's failure to register when he's representing Ukrainian or Chinese communist interests. No problem for Hunter, although there's a pending investigation that, again, seems to be going nowhere into Hunter Biden while they're raiding Rudy Giuliani's home over what appears to be, per what Giuliani is characterizing, the warrant is saying, one Ukrainian national who he is alleged to have represented, he said he never registered under the Foreign Agent Registration Act because he explicitly never represented a foreign national, that he was very specific about that, that in contractual language with his engagements, I will not lobby on your behalf, because he believed it to be a conflict of interest while also serving at the pleasure of President Trump. So it seems like it's pretty straightforward. If there is contractual language and then there's otherwise no animating behavior or event that would implicate Giuliani as acting under the regulatory purview of the Foreign Agent Registration Act, then, you know, whatever he's got on those electronic devices, he's got. But as he said in the interview with Tucker Carlson, he and through his attorney have volunteered to come in and speak to the FBI anytime they want, so long as there's some understanding of the scope of the conversation. Can't just be an open-ended fishing expedition. Right. I'm happy to come in and talk, answer your questions, but tell me, you know, what areas of inquiry you're pursuing, and then we can have a conversation. But that's not what they want here. They want a spectacle. It's very interesting. He went on to say, did Rudy, that DOJ should be investigated. Here we go again. Who investigates the investigators? Not for this investigation into Rudy Giuliani, but for surveilling him during his time representing President Trump during impeachment 2.0, excuse me, impeachment 1.0 over, you know, his conversation with Zelensky in Ukraine. And via the cloud, obtaining confidential information, attorney-client privileged information, between Giuliani and Trump?
Well, I think it should get much bigger. I think they should be investigated for blatantly violating my constitutional rights, the president's constitutional rights, in the middle of the impeachment defense. They invaded, without telling me, my iCloud. They took documents that are privileged, and then they unilaterally decided what they could read and not read. So the prosecutors, the Justice Department, spied on me. And that is, if that is not taken seriously, if that doesn't result in their being sanctioned, the case being dismissed, and it's stopping, this is no longer a free country. We might as well be in, you know, East Berlin before the wall fell. This is tactics only known in a dictatorship, where you seize a lawyer's records right in the middle of his representation of his client. You should be prosecuted and disbarred for that. You shouldn't be prosecuting somebody else.
You know, I don't think Giuliani afforded himself very well in the post-election challenges representing Trump's interest. I don't think any of Trump's attorneys, most of them at least, not the public-facing ones, presented themselves or afforded themselves very well. And I know people are critical of that. You can't say anything bad about Sidney Powell or Rudy Giuliani. Well, that's just nonsense.
No, it was embarrassing.
It was a mess. But that doesn't mean that Rudy Giuliani isn't still a skilled attorney. That doesn't mean that he isn't right about this. That doesn't mean that it isn't great that he is coming forward, not just saying, I'm not going to comment on a pending investigation. No, he's taking the posture, I'm not going to get beat up in a back alley by the feds.
And even offering to come in with his attorney to answer questions.
I'm taking this out from the shadows, and I'm going to tell you what I have. I'm going to tell you what the feds don't want that I have. I'm going to tell you what they're accusing me of. I'm going to tell you what I did, and I'm happy to prove up. That's open and transparent. And so, you know, we'll see where the facts lead. I don't know. I don't know if the representations he's making about those Hunter Biden hard drives are accurate. But he's making claims that are verifiable or that can be or verified or unverified, discarded. That's a lot better than we're getting from the Biden administration and the suddenly uninquisitive D.C. press corps. Hunter Biden is under federal investigation. The big guy, something that still has never been confirmed, never pressed on the president. Rudy Giuliani can go a long way to making amends for the post-election fiasco in this matter, I'll tell you. Bob in Edison Park.
Yeah, guys, I'd just like to know, were the FBI agents who raided Giuliani's house, were they wearing body cameras? And, Amy, I really like one day when you talk to Pritzker Lightfoot, ask them if the federal, as we move toward the federalization of police, if federal agents working in the Chicago or state, are they required the same rules of engagement and the same rules that police are under? So do they have to wear body cameras? I think this is a big question that needs to be answered.
They don't. Thanks for the call, Bob. They don't have the same domestic policing responsibilities, obviously. But it is interesting. I mean, the FBI is involved in sting operations and so forth, where
taking down our politicians,
where there could be violence. They have, you know, being an FBI agent, a special agent, it can be a dangerous job. There's no question. This actually is an interesting question, the sort of the same requirements that they're imposing that are being imposed on local police departments. It's interesting.
This is the Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So yesterday, we played clips from an interview Fredo Cuomo did with Biden's senior COVID advisor, this guy named Andy Slavitt.
Doesn't he just look slimy?
He is slimy. Read his Twitter account. He's also unhinged. And he's your senior COVID advisor.
That's a disgrace.
You should really check out Andy Slavitt's Twitter account. It's quite something. We've actually mentioned some tweets from him on the show previously when he was tapped to be the senior COVID advisor, but I digress. The interesting thing is, so Fredo was trying to get out of Slavitt. What is your position on vaccines? Do they work and you can resume normal life or not? What is the sort of kind of but no? And so, I mean, Savannah Guthrie, of all people, now you're talking about like room temperature IQs that are deconstructing the vaunted experts, Andy Slavitt, St. Tony Fauci. So Savannah Guthrie on the Today Show, this sort of, you know, relatively inoffensive and ill-informed, unoffensive.
Well, they just do, you know, like.
She's sort of, you know, politely uninformed. So she's an
attorney.
So? How many attorneys do you know that are dopes?
Not you.
Most of them. Yeah. The law degree confers.
All of them. Oh, wait.
Confers nothing except the right to be a member of a cartel. So Guthrie, you know, I know she had like the one Trump interview. When she tries to press, it's usually sort of like, oh, look, she's, you know, trying to have an adult conversation. Isn't that cute? And that goes for, you know, most of the morning talk bots. So it's not just Savannah Guthrie. But on this one, she just, you know, like a simple real world mom anecdote that she gave and asked Tony Fauci to make sense of it. Like, how does this work with the masking thing where I, who am not fully vaccinated, don't have to wear a mask, but my daughter getting off the school bus does have to wear a mask? Like, so what's going on? But before we even get there, listen to something in this first bite. Listen to something that Tony Fauci said, too, about kids being vaccinated. All kids, all ages.
Yeah, because they're going to lower it here in Illinois, trust me, to 12.
They're going to lower it to zero.
Really?
By the end of the year is what Tony Fauci basically indicated.
I'll tell you a story. I walked to pick up my little girl at the bus stop yesterday after the CDC recommendations came out. I took off my mask. I waited for her. There was no one else around. She got off the bus with her little mask on. She had to wear her mask. I didn't on the walk home. When are kids going to be able to take off those masks and play outside at the playground?
You know, that's going to be the same thing that I mentioned a moment ago. It's going to be a situation. Well, first of all, kids will ultimately wind up getting vaccinated, but you want to have some activity in that direction before they do. High school kids will likely get vaccinated as we get into the fall term, and children of any age will likely be vaccinated by the time we get to the end of the year. But let's not talk about the end of the year. Let's talk about the immediate or intermediate future. When children are out in the community, when you have 30, 40, 50,000 new infections per day, they are unvaccinated now because children can't get vaccinated now. And for that reason, they are more at risk of getting infected because they are out in the community where there is a lot of infection. When the community level starts to go way down, the risks to everybody, including the children, is going to be dramatically diminished.
I know what you're thinking after hearing that. Wait a second. Savannah Guthrie picks her child up off a school bus? Don't they send like a Today Show limo for her kid?
No, she's very down to earth. Born okay. and raised in Tucson.
Yeah, all right.
No, I'm just saying
Spare
she's down
me.
To earth.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Well, so the important part of this, kids of any age by the end of the year.
Uh-oh. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Fauci inadvertently gave you the path that they're on, the path you knew they were on. But then now you really start to have to make a choice. It's one thing to say, I don't care about going to sporting events or conventions or whatnot. I don't care about all this, the re-entry requirements for adults vaccinated versus unvaccinated. What about when they mandate it for your kid to go to school?
Well, what they're dangling here in Chicago, real quick, what they're dangling over us is I told Dr. Wardy yesterday, I said a lot of parents were getting our kids vaccinated because we don't want them to quarantine because somebody in their pod or on their team is going to get COVID. And so we don't want them to be stuck in the house for 14 days. That's a way you know, to encourage parents to get their kids vaccinated.
Broadly speaking, and again, different schools can have different decisions in place, but the broad public health guidance is that if someone is fully vaccinated, they do not need to quarantine after exposure because...
Got that, guys? They do not need to fully quarantine after exposure. They say that now, but the CPS and CTU will probably come back and say, no, they'll change it. So we'll all get our kids vaccinated, and then they'll change the rules once again. But just listen to what she said today, because today is what? April 30th.
So they'll treat the kids the same way they're treating adults right now. You're vaccinated, but still wear a mask because the cases are so high. The community, first of all, kids are not particularly vulnerable to this, as we know. Fauci glosses over that. Secondly, what are you talking about? The cases are high. There's, you know, real danger of community spread with this high level of
cases. There's not a high level of cases anywhere.
The pandemic is over. It's not saying people getting infected is over. COVID cases, that's not over. People getting sick is never over. The pandemic is over. And that should be the thrust of the debate now. Instead of this sort of dancing around on the margins with these goonish central planners. So Guthrie went back at him again about her anecdote. She doesn't have to wear a mask, but the daughter does. And
the daughter, if she gets it, has a 99.997% chance of surviving.
And Fauci was, you know, sort of throwing up all over himself.
But isn't it a weird situation because I'm not fully vaccinated yet? I can take off my mask and walk home. She can't. Like, doesn't that just point up that the CDC guidelines, there's some kind of disconnect if that's the situation?
Good, Savannah.
Well, yeah, what you're pointing out, what you're referring to, Savannah, is the top two not fully vaccinated that people can go out without masks. If you walk, run with members of your household, attend a small outdoor gathering, fully vaccinated with friends. Then after that, everything has a mask on it, as you're showing correctly now on the screen. So what you're asking, if you are on the left-hand part and you see unvaccinated people, walk outdoors with members of your household.
What?
And you're asking now, if your child is a member of your household, can you walk outdoors with your child without a mask? According to that chart, the answer is yes.
But the child can't, not to beat it to death. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Oh, my. First of all, govern your own children. Savannah, wake up. Take the mask off your daughter. You're walking with your daughter down the street into your house.
Fauci, he's
a mess.
The way that he answered that question was just to basically interpret for us the cartoonish CDC guidelines that Savannah Guthrie was showing on the screen in advance of the interview and referencing. Yeah, no, I know what the CDC guidelines say, doctor. That's not the question. The question is, how do they make sense? How does what Savannah Guthrie said, the example she gave, how does that make sense? Don't repeat to me what I told you, which is what the guidelines are. We know what the guidelines are. We agree. Now tell me how that makes sense.
I mean, if what he's saying, it sounds like the daughter should be masked up, while in the home with Savannah. It's so stupid.
Just remember, we played it before. Not a lot of outlets have picked this up. Dr. Kerry Mullis, the Nobel Prize winning biochemist who essentially discovered the technology that is used in the PCR tests. This is what he had to say about Tony Fauci back in the day at the during the AIDS epidemic. This is an interview he gave in the early 90s, informed in part by Fauci's performance during the AIDS epidemic in the 80s.
What is it about humanity that wants to go to all the details and stuff and listen? You know, these guys like Fauci get up there and start talking. You know, he doesn't know anything really about anything. And I'd say that to his face. Nothing. The man thinks you can take a blood sample and stick it in an electron microscope, and if it's got a virus in there, you'll know it. He doesn't understand electron microscopy, and he doesn't understand medicine, and he should not be in a position like he's in.
Wow.
Most of those guys up there on the top are just total administrative people, and they don't know anything about what's going on at the bottom. You know, those guys have got an agenda, which is not what we would like them to have, being that we pay for them to take care of our health in some way. They've got a personal kind of agenda, They make up their own rules as they go. They change them when they want to. And they smugly, like Tony Fauci, does not mind going on television in front of the people that pay his salary and lie directly into the camera. You can't expect the sheep to really respect the best and the brightest. They don't know the difference, really. I mean, I like humans, don't get me wrong, but basically the vast majority of them do not possess the ability to judge who is and who isn't a really good scientist. I mean, that's a problem, that's a main problem actually with science, I'd say, in this century, because science is being judged by people. Funding is being done by people who don't understand it. Okay, who do we trust? Fauci? Fauci doesn't know enough to, you know. If Fauci wants to get on television with somebody who knows a little bit about this stuff and debate him, he could easily do it because he's been asked. I mean, I've had a lot of people, president of the University of South Carolina, ask Fauci if he'd come down there and debate me on the stage in front of the student body, because I wanted somebody who was from the other side to come down there and balance my, because I felt like, well, these guys can listen to me, but I need to have somebody else down here that's going to tell me the other side. But Fauci didn't want to do it.
And here we are 41 years later, and Fauci's still
93.
Oh, that was 93.
27 years later. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said 80.
Yeah.
And he's still in power. And people are still listening to him. Trump should have fired him when he could have.
Well, I mean, it's so interesting, everything that Carrie Mullis, Nobel Prize winner, biochemist, had to say about Fauci, how what he was describing Fauci as 27 years ago, which fits exactly what Fauci has demonstrated himself to be over the last year, doesn't it? Hasn't he? And the other thing, though, the failure of the Trump administration to not surround him and Birx with other people, the Martin Kulldorffs, the Sunetra Guptas, the Jay Bhattacharyas, the John Ioannidis, many others. That failure.
Shame on
and then the failure of the media. He makes a great point about these people making judgments who are in no position to judge. They have no idea. But you can, you know, hold people's, even if you have no scientific background, you can sort of follow logical threads and you can hold people to account for what they say and the implications of their policies and make some assessments in real time about whether this is working and this makes sense in terms of the trade-offs or not. In addition to that, it's a failure of the media to not put people side by side. I'd love for Tony Fauci to be on this show. He won't come on shows like this for exactly the reason that Carrie Mullis said. And he won't go head-to-head with any of the equally credentialed infectious disease experts, if not more credentialed.
The only one he sparred with is Dr. Rand Paul.
That I mentioned, and he has to spar with Paul because, you know, Senate oversight responsibilities. He has a professional duty to appear before the Senate. So that's unwilling, but, that's compelled. But if he has a chance to volunteer, he doesn't want to volunteer. He wants to go up against Savannah Guthrie and Fredo Cuomo.
Yeah, but now they're even pushing back.
John and Huntley, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
My call, guys. I guess we're going to be closing all the pools in the summer now, because
what?
I remember, I'm old enough to remember that during the 50s, we closed all the pools because of polio. So even though the kids are getting polio shots today, we got to close the schools. That's all I got to say. I'm going to go read the Babylon Bee today. Thanks.
There you go, John. Babylon Bee is like becoming the paper of record in America. Clay and Wheeling.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Happy belated birthday, Dan. I owe you a cigar next time I see you.
Thank you so much.
So this vaccine, does not stop.
You also owe Louis Aparicio a birthday. He and I share a birthday.
I'm 27. I'm not sure who Louis Aparicio is.
That is, that's your age is no excuse. The Go-Go Sox, Go-Go White Sox, Hall of Fame shortstop, first Venezuelan player inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'm sure he knew that, right,
all right.
Clay?
I've stopped watching sports altogether for quite a while.
I'll bring him to the cigar shop. We both turned 87 yesterday, and we'll both enjoy a cigar on you. All right, sorry. Go ahead, Clay.
So the vaccine, it did not stop the spread of COVID. If you get it, it won't stop me from spreading it to other people. There's no long-term safety studies on it. There's been deaths and injuries reported because of it, and the makers are not liable. Why would anybody pump this stuff into their kids. It makes zero sense. The United States population is basically in a giant lab rat at this point. It's a giant experiment. How can people say this is good for us? That's my comment.
Thanks for the call, Clay. Appreciate it.
Half of Chicago has been vaccinated.
Vincent St. Charles.
Morning, guys. I'm a Cub fan, and I remember Louis Brichel. I love those days. So he better get to the program and research on Louis Brichel. And belated happy birthday, Dan.
Thank you so much.
So also, the mass. I passed the Geneva Middle School, and they're all playing soccer and flag football and everything. And they're all wearing masks. I said, they're suffocating. How could they run around and wear masks? Then I drive through Missouri, and if you go into a place of business, you don't have to wear a mask. I didn't see any signs. Nobody was wearing a mask, so it was very liberating not wearing a mask going through a free state like Missouri.
Yeah.
So that's my mask comment. Thank you.
Thanks, Vince. Larry and Bartlett.
Hey, good morning. Yes, I'm an old Cub fan, and I, too, remember Louis Aparicio and Nellie Fox. Dan, I'm sorry, I forgot the name of the lady who's the medical director for Chicago, but the news clip you played, she said different schools can have different rules and regulations. Didn't Springfield just halfway, I guess it was the House pass a bill that said that IDPH gets to rule over all schools that must follow all Illinois rules. So how can we have different rules for different schools?
Well, that's not the law yet.
The House.
That's not the law yet, number one. Thanks for the call, Larry. Number two, that'll be prospective, I presume. Although, you know, they may keep this going for a couple years yet.
Oh, God, please.
Mike in Plano.
Hey, guys, I know conservative media likes attacking Dr. Fauci, and rightfully so, but they have a role to play in this, too, especially the doctors that they brought on their shows, guys like Dr. Mark Siegel or Jeanette Nashwat, and there's another woman, I can't remember her name, that used to appear in Fox News all the time. They used to push COVID propaganda all the time as a means to sell their books. And even Tucker Carlson, you watch his show, he's always anti-Fauci and anti-COVID this and that. I remember over a year ago, he was attacking Trump for not reacting fast enough to the COVID virus, and he compared him to Woodrow Wilson during 1918 Spanish flu. So why aren't we holding Tucker Carlson to account? These other fools.
Absolutely, Mike. That is a fair point. Absolutely it is. Tucker Carlson was a borderline hysteric at the beginning of this. Tucker Carlson has been wrong on a lot of things. Tucker Carlson is not the Oracle of Delphi. He's useful on a lot of topics, and where he's useful, we employ him, and where he's not useful, we'll criticize him, or I certainly will. Remember when he effectively endorsed Elizabeth Warren's economic plan during the Democrat Socialist primary for president in the run-up to the 2020 election? This was lunacy. You know, Tucker Carlson has gone through some metamorphoses over the years during his career.
Wasn't he a shock jock at first?
I wouldn't quite go that far, but he was on with, like, Bubba the Love Sponge.
Yeah, Bubba Love. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, he was the Morning Zoo crew.
Yeah, but regardless, yeah, I mean, you know, nobody is, including us, nobody is beyond reproach. That's the one takeaway from all this, science or no science, the debates are never over. We're always gaining more understanding. Or having to deal with more manifestations of ignorance. And absolutely always ask questions. Never stop asking questions. I love the Edgar County Watchdog's simple formulation. Who says and what evidence do you have? Put it to me. Put it to everybody in public office. Put it to everybody in the media. Put it to federal law enforcement and federal prosecutors and everybody else. No one is above reproach. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Their call for unity is a joke.
News.
Important question is not whether you're right or they're right, but why we shouldn't have the right to flip the channel.
Fuels. Opinion.
We have got to stop making it a crime to be a Republican.
News. Opinion. Insight. On AM 560. The Answer.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Going to get a little philosophical here. this piece by Kaelin Ford at the American Mind, AmericanMind.org, project of the Claremont Institute. She talks about the purge, or cancel culture, as it's popularly termed, that's ongoing, and how difficult it is for so many people who are ground under by it. People who feel themselves to be part of the world. When we're surrounded with friends and family, when we enjoy the esteem of our peers, or when we're doing meaningful work that we love, we might begin to think that this life is the only one that matters, and that all of our striving and all our petty grievances actually amount to something. And so we treat this place as our permanent home rather than a place of pilgrimage. Sometimes it takes a searing injustice and an abrupt loss of wealth, position, friends, purpose, to remember that worldly ambitions are all doomed to ultimate frustration. We all realize this fact in death, but by then we're past improving. So what happened to her that she took a step back and got philosophical about cancel culture, about the thuggery afoot? The forced recollection of earthly impermanence came 2 years ago for Kaelin. I had a promising career by most measures. At 32, I was a wife and mother of two children, an award-winning documentary filmmaker, and a former advisor at the Canadian Foreign Ministry. I had recently completed my second master's degree, graduating from Oxford University with distinction in international human rights law. I was also a political candidate on track to win a seat in the provincial legislature in Alberta. But my campaign ended abruptly, 1 month before the election, when a partisan blog published an anonymous accusation that I had, quote, echoed white nationalist rhetoric, unquote, in a private academic conversation years before. In context, I was discussing how policymakers can more effectively address the problem of far-right radicalism. In my accuser's telling, I was expressing sympathy with white supremacist terrorism. A media storm ensued, and within 4 hours, my candidacy and life as I knew it was over. I spent the next month the target of a mindless struggle campaign, facing constant demands that I confess and apologize for imagined thought crimes. I was denounced as a fascist, a white supremacist, a terrorist sympathizer whose views were vile, shocking, and sickening. People I had never met went on national media and attributed to me hateful, inane beliefs that I never held, and explain why I deserve to be ostracized and driven permanently from the public square. Partisan activists attacked my family and my faith community. They demanded my friends denounce me, scoured my work history to see if I had any other employers who could be pressured into firing me. The conflagration destroyed my career and reputation, maybe irredeemably, because Google never forgets. Meanwhile, I was not allowed a platform to defend myself. Several journalists and editors told me that they knew the narrative about me was false, but they were afraid to report my side of the story because they didn't want to be targeted next. The one radio program that hosted me faced boycott campaigns, and the interview was ultimately pulled offline under threats. A number of my former colleagues were privately sympathetic, but none would risk the stain of public association. With a handful of exceptions, most people thought it would be easier to simply pretend I didn't exist. As a public person, I felt as if I had been vaporized and condemned to live as a kind of a ghost. Yet while I don't mean to downplay the pain of the experience, this also may be the greatest blessing, the blessing of it, the exile from this world, when you're a person of this world and being exiled from it. The greatest blessing? It is a social murder, a death within life, which forces us into confrontation with our own finitude. If the goal of philosophy is to learn how to die, then there is no better way to practice it. Stripped of all illusions and pretense, the petty dust of life can sometimes give way to a lucid clarity. In exile, we're made to remember our true homes while we still have time to make ourselves worthy of returning there. And she references others who've been exiled in one form or fashion. Victor Hugo by Napoleon. Alex, obviously, Solzhenitsyn, who was sent to the gulags. The philosopher Seneca. Dante, actually, also exiled to some extent. It's very interesting, her perspective on what happened to her and what's happening generally. But the courage you find when you realize that so much of these trappings are not worth trading your soul for, and you get a new perspective. She writes about the cancel culture, the purge. It reflects and heightens the inverted priorities of the world. It incentivizes cruelty and performative outrage, and so suffocates humility, generosity, and openness. It asks us to go in search of grievances and to look for the bad in others, but never to reproach ourselves. It inflames tribal hatreds and artificial divisions. It demands that people lie, that they confess to crimes they didn't commit, and that they conceal their true beliefs to preserve themselves. Envy, hubris, and wrath are rewarded, while prudence and a slowness to judgment are treated with suspicion, as though they are evidence of an insufficient commitment to the cause. In the name of love and tolerance and solidarity, it takes us to hate our enemies, inform on our neighbors, and desert our friends. Is that a life you want to live?
A lot of us are already living it.
Yeah. Is that? Are you happy about that? If you are you happy about that life you're living?
No.
Is it important to preserve? Is it that important to preserve your nice home and nice car and so your kid gets into the school that you want them to get into or that they want to get into, because those are the ultimate goods? And this is just a small sacrifice. Hating your enemies, or at least performatively so, publicly. Ratting out your neighbors, deserting your friends. Is that a good trade-off? Is that a good trade-off for professional success? Or for material well-being? You want to make that trade? Cancel culture operates on a similar principle to the Inferno, referencing Dante. Delivers perpetual punishment without any possibility of redemption. For heretics or perceived heretics against an emerging ideological orthodoxy, people who used the wrong word, defended inherited wisdom, attempted to critically examine a topic that had been declared off limits to inquiry. Mm-hmm. She goes on to write, for a few months, I found it easy to maintain this philosophical perspective. It was easy in part because I believed I would eventually be vindicated. The truth would come out and I would have a place in the world again. Anyone can bear suffering nobly when they know that and when it will end. But a faith that is contingent is not real. It's just bargaining. Ooh, that's good. Yes. And so maybe it doesn't end. You know, I mean, in this world populated by the fallible, those given to movements that ask us to hate our enemies, inform our neighbors and on our neighbors and desert our friends, the truth doesn't always win out. Not on the timeline you hoped it would. Justice isn't always served. You don't always come back from a blow like Kalen Ford apparently suffered. And again, I don't know the specifics of her campaign up in Canada, so I'm just taking her perspective as given on it. But the larger review of the purge going on is the more important piece anyway. Inside ourselves, we hold our most precious possessions, which can never be taken away. Fortune can take away your friends and your property. It can rob you of your health and leave you soaked in slander. But nothing that happens to us can make us less virtuous or just or temperate or kind. Not unless we allow ourselves to be changed for the worst. Nothing that happens to us can make us less virtuous or just or temperate or kind unless we allow ourselves to be changed for the worst. Nothing can deprive us of our inner freedom nor stop us from setting honest deeds against dishonest words or helping our friends or giving succor to those in need. Is that what you see playing out? Is that how you're playing it out during these times? What about these trade-offs? Jordan in Antioch. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, guys. Sorry, driving a garbage truck.
Yeah.
You know, in comment to in what you're saying there, and the way that I combat it, my friends combat it, is I do not allow those people near me or my family or my friends. As soon as those people unveil who they are, the ones that want to shun everybody and break everything down and exploit all your supposed badnesses, I push them away and I tell them simply right to their face. I tell them I don't want you or anybody like you near me or my friends. Please just go away. I don't have there is no room in my life for somebody like you. And for better or worse, it works, because as soon as I find out who they are, I let them know who I am. I let them, I surround myself not within an echo chamber. I love diverse opinions, but I will not surround myself with people that are like that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It makes a lot of sense.
And I verbally, and so do my friends and the people within my inner circle, we verbally and vocally and visually push those people away and force them into segregation away from us. And we explain to them why. And if they don't get it, I don't really care. But my advice to anybody that don't be afraid to push these people away, because we far outnumber the logical, rational, sane people. Far outnumber these people, and they are exposing themselves for who they are. And the more that you expose them for who they are in front of people like you, the more the people like you gain confidence and the ability to do the same.
Thanks for that.
That's all I got. I mean, it's just push back and keep pushing back, and don't allow them any room in your heart or your life.
Thanks for the call, Jordan. Good stuff. Appreciate it. Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, that was very good. You know, I think one of the problems that, you know, some folks are going to have, you know, like this poor woman, I mean, these people just go after others and destroy their lives completely and basically want them living on the streets. And, you know, for some, I think that, you know, it's going to end badly in a number of ways. I mean, you know, some people just end themselves, unfortunately. But, you know, I think that, you know, it's going to come back to bite these people doing what they're doing. I mean, you know what? Look at history. It has a way of repeating itself. Look what happened to Robespierre, man.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Greg.
No, sometimes I feel like they're not going to stop until they're dead. And then they still won't be happy.
Yeah, but it's...
And then they'll go after their family.
But what about... Enough about them. What about us? Ms. Ford quotes from Victor Hugo's description of his time in exile when he was banished by Napoleon. He wrote that, I find increasingly that exile is good. It's as if without their knowing, the exiles were near some sort of sun. They mature quickly. I feel that I'm on the true peak of life. I can distinguish the real lineaments of all that people call facts, history, events, successes, catastrophes, the huge machinery of providence. At least for this reason alone, I should thank Mr. Bonaparte, who exiled me, and God who chose me. Maybe I shall die in this exile, but I shall die a better man. All is well. I don't, you know, I get it. That people have ends to meet and responsibilities to abide and kids to raise and so forth. So it's not so easy just to exile yourself to an island in the English Channel and
sounds lovely
and spend your time reflecting on yourself and humanity. But I mean, there is something to that though, too. That's an extreme case for people that are able to do that. But I mean, there are cases where somebody who's less able to do that, like Kaylin Ford, this documentary filmmaker in Canada, where she's been forced into it. Mother of two in her 30s, had a career going. Now she doesn't. And
make people think twice before they run for office.
Is that the takeaway?
No, it's not. I'm just saying she's got to be wondering, why did I get into this? Why did I do this to myself?
Yeah. Well, that's the attitude that's the attitude of the deserter. Why did I do that to myself?
You go through all stages of grief, you know, where you question what got me into this?
Yes.
How did I get in this position? When it's really
okay,
the people who are, it's really the people who are attacking her. It's their fault.
Right. And so, In the name of love and tolerance and solidarity, it asks us to hate our enemies, inform on our neighbors, and desert our friends. Is there any price you would pay to live that life? Ignacio in Spring Grove.
Hey, how are you? Good morning. Hey, listen, I think we'll go from Dante to Dickens. So the Tale of Two Cities, where the Reign of Terror, which is really, quite honestly, there's modern-day examples in Cuba, the CDR, Committee for the Defense of the Revolution. You mentioned this lady when she wrote about being denounced. These are all the things that history has taught us, and it's repeating itself, and I fear that in what she said, that some people are going to seek to be noble in suffering and kind of roll over and die. And I can see grasping and getting strength from, but the last thing you need to do is accept it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I agree. I agree. Thanks for the call, Ignacio. I don't know that, but I would hasten to add that the exile that she's talking about and that she references with these other notable intellects from time immemorial, I don't know that that's accepting it. Certainly Alexander Solzhenitsyn never accepted the gulag. He provided insights into man's inhumanity to man that reverberate century later and will reverberate for centuries yet to come. And that's important too.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Fungible CNN analyst Van Jones had this to say about Senator Tim Scott's Republican response to Biden's non-State of the Union speech. This is Van Jones after the speech.
But he lost a lot of African Americans by the tens of millions when he said America is not a racist nation. Look, you can say that we're getting better. You can say that we've come a long way. But when you look at these numbers, when you look at these statistics, it is very clear that this country is still struggling with racism. We still have racism showing up in almost every institution.
Uh-huh. So Senator Tim Scott lost millions of black Americans by saying America is not a racist nation. That's interesting. Kamala Harris was on with Clinton Foundation donor Zero, little George, the day after the non-State of the Union speech. She had this to say about America on the topic of race.
Well, first of all, no, I don't think America is a racist country, but we also do have to speak truth about the history of racism.
Yeah.
No, I caught that.
Did she lose tens of millions of black Americans because she said the same thing that Tim Scott said? Did Tim Scott ever say, has Tim Scott ever said once, has any serious person ever said once that racism doesn't exist or didn't exist, that we need to be honest about our history? Who argues against that? These are straw men that are erected by men and women without chests like Kamala Harris and Van Jones to make an unreasonable position that Senator Tim Scott so eloquently outlined, curing discrimination with discrimination, sound reasonable. That's what they're doing. So,
yeah, and he recounted his own experiences with discrimination, then declared America is not a racist country.
So make sure when you hear the sort of cant from Kamala Harris that you hear from Kamala Harris and Van Jones in your circles, you push back straight away. Straight away. The same people who are so high-minded that they refer to Tim Scott as Uncle Tim.
Yeah, and it took Twitter 11 hours to take that down. But it exposed the hateful bias on the left of any person of color who doesn't agree with them.
The same D.C. press corps, so enlightened, they're challenging Tim Scott's familial history because while grandfather couldn't read, great-grandfather had amassed some land, and as we discussed yesterday.
Well, his grandfather dropped out of school to pick cotton, and they seem to gloss over that.
And as we discussed yesterday, the idea that black Americans amassed some property during the Reconstruction era, during Jim Crow, says nothing about the lives they led. It's missing the forest for the trees, as Eric Erickson wrote. The lives they led under racist institutions, under racist laws. That's the conservatives' understanding of American history. So you want to go chapter and verse on American history with me, Van Jones, Vice President Harris, any of these other race hustlers out there? Marxists using race for their hustle, really. For more on this, the two speeches and where the two parties go from here, pleased to be joined again by Andy Kroll, Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief for Rolling Stone Magazine. Andy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So you think that you think the Democrats really want to stake their electoral claim going forward on this debate, in quotation marks, of whether America is or is not a racist nation, and distinguish the nuances between their claims of it's not a racist nation, but it's systemically racist at the same time, as Van Jones was trying to explain?
No, I don't think that the Democrats, certainly the party led by Joe Biden right now, wants to go into the 2022 midterm elections, or even, dare I say, the next presidential election, having that kind of debate, or at least putting that debate at the center of their message. I mean, I listened to both speeches on Wednesday night, and listening to the Biden non-State of the Union, State of the Union, I mean, I don't think he could get the word jobs in there often enough. Everything has had something to do with jobs and creating jobs. And that is so clearly what he, President Biden, wants the next year and a half to be about, and what he wants the 2020 midterms to be about. But that is not what the day after conversation was, clearly seeing what Vice President Harris said, seeing the back and forth over Senator Tim Scott's rebuttal as well. So you see a sort of competition here for the terms of the debate. Again, heading into a midterm election, that could be huge if Democrats either keep or lose control of the House or the Senate.
Well, let's talk about what he didn't talk about. I mean, he didn't mention at all the crisis at the border, immigration policy, or the national debt from any of these trillion-dollar stimulus packages he's passing.
No, he didn't talk about those issues. I mean, I think the border is not an issue that President Biden is going to bring up willingly in a speech like this. And he wants to tout his victories. He wants to lay out this vision, which he did, of a sort of neo-New Deal, massive government spending program on everything from COVID relief to infrastructure to human infrastructure, you know, child care, paid leave, all the things that he talked about, to the American Families Plan, and on and on. And the border is not a success story for this president right now, just as it wasn't for the previous president, and the president before him, and the president before him, because it is such a unbelievably infuriatingly hard issue for any president in any party. And so you see Biden trying to set the terms of the debate. And really, I mean, this was a candidate who, we forget, you know, was quoted at a donor event saying, you know, nothing major is going to change under some of his policies. And then what he laid out on Wednesday night was, you know, really a taking a cue from Franklin Roosevelt in terms of using government to reshape all different parts of American life, and believing that those trillions of dollars that are going to be spent in the name will pay for themselves. You know, whether that's actually the case will, of course, depend on whether these bills get passed and whether the economic logic behind them is sound or not. But that is clearly the Biden vision at this point, and it is a lot of government spending, a lot of government vision here, and I think we're going to see a huge battle this year in the House and in the Senate over how much of that actually comes to life.
Yeah, the old Trojan Biden routine, huh? The candidate, nothing major is going to change, and then now we have the guy who wants to be FDR Redux. Yeah, that's not exactly a new move in politics. I wonder what what you think about the possibility that the ground is shifting a little bit under Fortune 500, Chamber of Commerce, America. I ask that because of some successive op-eds, one from Ted Cruz and the other from Kim Strassel in the Wall Street Journal. Ted Cruz saying that he's not going to take any money from corporate PACs. I think the implication would also be C-suite executives from those Fortune 500 companies. And, you know, maybe Ted Cruz isn't going to get a lot of support from those entities anyway, but it's more, I think, I hope, to provide leadership for others to follow suit, to suggest that the next time Boeing comes before them for, you know, tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions from the Export-Import Bank, maybe if we're in charge, we finally let the Export-Import Bank expire, for example, and so on and so forth. And Strassel writing about the 15 freshman Democrats that that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce supported in their contest against Republicans. And maybe that formal separation between the Republican Party, at least the conservative base of the Republican Party, and corporate America, that is starting to be a real thing, not just a talking point.
It's definitely a realignment, or the makings of a realignment, that we haven't seen in a long time. I mean, I covered the Chamber of Commerce and a lot of these same issues during the Obama presidency, and you wouldn't find a more well-funded, organized, angry opponent to a lot of what the Obama administration was proposing in the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and its leader, Tom Donahue, at the time. I mean, that was really one of the great dramas of the Obama years, was the Democrats versus the Chamber and, you know, the different other sort of trade groups that, that kind of follow in the Chamber's wake. But now that is changing in strange ways. You have the Chamber supporting, as you said, some House Democrats. You have the Chamber really pushing, for a lot of obvious reasons and probably a lot of self-interested ones as well, an infrastructure bill, infrastructure package. And you have as well around some of this activism pushing corporations to speak out against the Georgia voting law, voting laws in other states. You have this rift opening up in the sort of Republican corporate alliance in a way that, you know, wasn't the case in the last 10 years, really. It's early days in this. And I don't know if this is, you know, the Josh Hawleys and the Marco Rubios of the world saying, okay, now is the moment where we're going to try to recast this party, the Republican Party, as populist or working class or what have you, or if this is a sort of temporary, you know, glitch in the system kind of thing. But there is a scrambling of the usual alliances, in some cases alliances that are 30 or 40 years old between the parties and industries. And again, who actually gets behind infrastructure or who gets behind some of these other big bills, I think is going to shape how this fight plays out. And it is a very strange time here in Washington to see these very strange bedfellows together.
Well, it would seem to me that, you know, if you're have the perspective of a more populist type of politician like Josh Hawley or even Ted Cruz to some extent, the play to the old guard is to say, you don't want Trump to come back. You want to marginalize Trump in this party. Then you better take up his attitude and his constituency, because if you don't take up his attitude on behalf of his constituency, the constituency he brought over so much from the Democratic Party in 2016, then you're not going to be in charge, and you're not going to be in charge of your own party. That would be my message to McConnell if I was coming from that perspective.
Right. You see this with a bunch of leading Republican elected officials. Hawley, Rubio, Cruz are obvious ones. I think you see a little bit of this from Rick Scott out of Florida. You see it from Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida. Moves being made to try to claim that Trump mantle, or at least the Trump populist mantle, the kinds of things he campaigned on in 2016, where this sets up a really interesting conflict, tension at least, is with the man you just mentioned, Mitch McConnell. And this is an elected official who has, you know, made his bones on really courting and tapping into the sort of, you know, finances, funds of Fortune 500 companies, of corporate America. I mean, Mitch McConnell is famous for getting into a dining room here in D.C. with a bunch of corporate lobbyists and just sitting there in silence until they started offering to write checks to him. I mean, that's his MO. That's what he's so good at. So what do you do when the party decides that, you know, it doesn't want, or members of the party don't want to be friends with the chamber and do want to stick their finger in the eye of Delta or Coca-Cola or any of these, you know, sort of big blue chip companies? I mean, it's an interesting clash without a doubt. And, you know, I think it's one of the more interesting things in the Republican Party going on right now. But I don't know who wins that. It's never good to bet against Mitch McConnell, but there may be larger forces at work here, especially if people are trying to get out in front of a Trump 2024 presidential campaign and try to claim that following, try to claim that mantle for themselves.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell was on Fox News yesterday, and, you know, Martha McCallum asked him, are you going to support Trump if he runs? And he said, I'll just support whoever the nominee is. But he said that there's three to four other senators that are vying for the position right now.
That's a classic Mitch McConnell answer. I mean, that is also right. Probably the smart answer. Why would he put his, you know, why would he get out in front of this? But, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot in the policy front with infrastructure, with all of these things that Biden is proposing with voting rights. And then all of this is through a lens of where does the Republican Party go from here? Mm-hmm. I mean, an election which, you know, the former President Trump narrowly lost and made some notable gains among traditionally Democratic voters, but also, is he going to run again? And if he doesn't, can anyone replicate what he did? And these are all these big questions hanging over the party right now, and we're starting to see it play out in these different things we're talking about, different senators we're watching.
Andy Krall, Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief for Rolling Stone Magazine. Andy, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Defer, defer, defer. Appease, 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 and it'll all get better. Justice Samuel Alito speaking to the Federalist Society's 2020 National Lawyers Convention last fall had this to say about that approach.
You can't say that marriage is a union between one man and one woman. Until very recently, that's what the vast majority of Americans thought. Now it's considered bigotry. That this would happen after our decision in Obergefell should not have come as a surprise. Yes, the opinion of the court included words meant to calm the fears of those who cling to traditional views on marriage. But I could see, and so did the other justices in dissent, where the decision would lead. I wrote the following. I assume that those who cling to old beliefs will be able to whisper their thoughts in the recesses of their homes. But if they repeat those views in public, they will risk being labeled as bigots and treated as such by governments, employers, and schools. That is just what is coming to pass.
And it's not just on that issue, of course. It's on every issue, because appeasement is provocative. And so is the court deferring, deferring, deferring. The high court, the conservative majority court, we're told. Justice Alito and Justice Thomas dissented in the decision by the United States Supreme Court on Monday to turn down Texas and, by extension, more than a dozen other states in a suit against the state of California that went into effect in 2017, instructing the attorney general to blacklist states with less progressive, quote unquote, policies on gay rights, transgender policy, or religious liberty than California. For example, Texas was identified because it does not compel religious child welfare organizations to place children with same-sex parents if it violates the rights of conscience of those organizations. California law bars the use of public funds for travel to any of the 12 states that they have blacklisted. So this invokes the Commerce Clause, and because this is a matter of states between states, Texas said, well, here, Supreme Court, you have original jurisdiction here. You need to settle this. They declined to take the case, and as the Wall Street Journal opined, by failing to take a stand early, the justices will make such a moment more politically fraught and more likely. It's the same principle at work that Sam Alito was describing happened culturally after the Obergefell decision. Once I have my position institutionalized, now I'm going to use it as a sword to eliminate dissent. That's the culture. And it's a problem. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Lionel Shriver, contributor to The Spectator, best-selling author of We Need to Talk About Kevin, which was also optioned into a movie you can check out, Tilda Swinton, if I'm remembering correctly, most recently, The Motion of the Body Through Space. She is also a contributor, as I mentioned, to The Spectator, where she's written about these topics in no uncertain terms. Lionel, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
It's nice to talk to you again.
Well, so this...
Although my most recent column was not about same-sex marriage. It was about reparations.
Right. But more generally, even your point, your column, Who Fears a Society That Hates Itself? And that's really the thing that's consistent across all of these topic areas, is you have a certain cadre of the privileged, if I dare use that term, who despise the West, whether it's the tradition in Britain or the tradition in America. And across the identitarian spectrum of issues, they are prosecuting their case against their society.
Well, I think we've got a problem because internally in Western countries, to trash your own country is to leverage your own status. That is, it makes you look good. I don't know how we got here, but that's the truth. But from the outside, it looks like a country that has completely lost faith in itself, and especially to the likes of China and Russia. It looks like weakness.
And it's
the Chinese are incredibly patriotic, and they have it drilled into them from an early age that basically, they're the greatest country in the world and the greatest people in the world. And in fact, quite the opposite of the West, where we're constantly mining our history for the most egregious things we've ever done. The Chinese are very good at completely eliminating anything from their history for their peoples that doesn't comport with how they think of themselves.
And then what do you think of this new...
Most Chinese have never heard of Tiananmen Square.
Because they control what they teach the kids. But now we're teaching kids critical race theory. And do you think that teaches kids to hate this country and each other?
Well, it's a very ugly way of looking at people, this CRT, as we're now calling it familiarly. We've instilled curricula in public schools that teach white students to be ashamed of themselves, to essentially believe that they were born racist, like original sin, and that it is their job to somehow make up for having been born, well, let's not mince words, evil, right?
Right.
And at the same time, that cannot be good for a kid who barely understands anything. I mean, we come innocent into this world, and they're trying to figure everything out. And this is what they're told. They have no reason to question it. They're not old enough to question it or to put it in historical context, or much less put it in a political context. But I think even more damagingly, we're also teaching minority students that they're doomed. That that the whole power structure of the country is aligned against them. And so there's no reason to make an effort to improve their circumstances, or for that matter, it seems to me, to learn anything. After all, we're also telling them that they're being fed white knowledge, which doesn't pertain to them or is a terrible imposition. So this is also not a formula for getting to work, for self-improvement, for optimism on one's own behalf. And in a lot of ways, this, however perversely, this critical race theory thinking is a way of nailing down racism and perpetuating it. And also perpetuating the very power structures that they perceive to be the enemy.
So while we're self-immolating, going back to the point you were making about how the Chinese and the Russians must be viewing this from afar, that also provides an opportunity. I mean, they're not innocent bystanders. They're not passive. That also presents opportunities for countries that have less than the best interests of the West at heart to exacerbate those divisions, exacerbate those conflicts, and to further degrade their enemies.
Well, you know, there was that bilateral summit in Alaska not long ago, where when our Secretary of State gently chided his Chinese counterpart over abuse of human rights in China with the likes of the Uyghur population, he immediately had to sit for, you know, an 18-minute harangue about how the U.S. didn't have a leg to stand on,
right,
and that we are a racist society. We have all these terrible problems that are entrenched, and we're basically calling the kettle black. So, you know, the Chinese are listening. They have lots of people feeding them information from Western campuses where they have set up these Confucian institutes. And furthermore, you know, we may know that they censor their people's access to the internet, but the leadership has plenty of access to the internet, and all of the articles and speeches and podcasts out there decrying our horrible society are completely available,
right,
to all our adversaries.
And what is Anthony Blinken to say when Chinese foreign secretary repeats his administration's rhetoric, his president's rhetoric, right back to him? I mean, that's all he had to do was cut and paste it, repeat it right back to him. What are you to say? I agree. That's the same thing that you say about your country.
Well, it's very similar, to use a smaller scale analogy. It's a little bit like, you know, how family members can get together and say absolutely atrocious things about each other. If someone else is listening and repeats the same things, then it's like, well, what do you mean? Don't attack my family.
Right.
It's very similar. You don't want family squabbles to get out into the world, and that's what we're doing. We're letting our family squabbles be used by people who take our self-criticism seriously, whereas in truth, a lot of the so-called self-criticism is people showing off how virtuous they are, competing with one another over who can seem more anti-racist, and these are people operating in a very provincial context. And the irony also is that a lot of these people who claim to feel terribly guilty, well, I don't even buy it. They don't feel guilty. They feel good about themselves. A lot of this is about making other people feel bad about themselves.
Yes. Yes, exactly. She is Lionel.
And that's fun. That's a lot of fun.
It is for
it's
some, apparently.
For some, yeah.
Not to, and there's.
Well, it's not my idea of a good time.
No, I know. And there's one other thing too. And then there's some people that are hustling for a paycheck. That this is industry for them too, and this pays pretty well. Look at the money that Black Lives Matter has raised over the last year.
The whole anti-racism thing has become a huge industry.
Right.
It's making certain people, a small collection of people, a fortune.
She is Lionel Shriver, contributor to The Spectator, best-selling author of We Need to Talk About Kevin and The Motion of the Body Through Space. Lionel, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Enjoyed talking to you.
Yes, thank you so much. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Chicago police and a shooting victim. Not the story the media usually obsesses about, but a story of two officers, Chicago police officers, Givens and Ward, who saved the life of a young man who was shot not by them.
2 years in Chicago police uniforms and a pair of young officers knew exactly what to do.
A lady waved us down and said there was someone shot in her backyard. We rerouted to the backyard, and across the street we saw a young man waving his hand saying that he was shot.
It took only a glance to see the bleeding victim near 82nd and South Cole Monday night was only a boy, just 13 years old. There were no seconds to spare.
Officer Ward wasted no time. I told her to grab his legs, that we were going to have to transport him ourselves.
From there, a police escort led their squad car speeding through Southside streets, lights and sirens blaring. Officer Rhonda Ward behind the wheel, racing to get to Comer Children's Hospital.
He was in and out of consciousness, so we were trying to keep him alive and keep him up.
He trusted us. No, we wanted him to, and we made it. We got there.
Within seconds of pulling up, doctors greeted the officers and raced the 13-year-old Swayze Rankin into surgery. His mother only heard of how he got there after the fact.
Those officers was quick thinking, and they were not going to wait for that EMS, and they got him right on time. So I'm highly grateful for you guys.
Officers Givens and Ward's fast action may well have saved that teenager's life.
It was just heartwarming for me that I could actually save a life, you know, because that's what I got on this job to do.
Not bad for awesome. Systemic racists.
Oh, yeah, right.
Not bad at all. That's more the story of the Chicago police and police around the country, isn't it?
It did make the A block on Channel 5 and Channel 7, so that was good.
Yeah, this is a way for them to pretend like they provide balanced, contextual coverage of police. They don't. But at least they reported this story, so you take what you can get, I suppose, from these network affiliates. Again, in Chicago, to date, 198 murders, 1,024 shooting victims. On the civilian side, on the police side, 8 police-involved shootings.
And 3 fatal.
3 fatalities, 5 injured.
But you wouldn't know that yesterday at the press conference when somebody from Channel 7 asked about, you've got to stop foot patrol chases because they're in the last week, 2 people have died because of foot patrol chases. And put it into context, it's not a systemic problem.
And when you're not dealing with that whole category of issue and politics, you're dealing with political ruling class D-bags like this Jewel Jones in Michigan, the state rep, youngest state rep elected in Michigan, I think, ever.
Yeah, we told you the story. He was pulled over for alleged drunk driving.
And he resisted arrest.
Yep.
He had to be handcuffed because he told the officers, he's a state rep, I run y'all's budget, call the Eva Perón of East Lansing. He didn't use that nickname. That's mine for her. Call Whitmer.
Yeah, he's one of those, don't you know who I am?
Tried to pull rank. Oh, by the way, we have now found out that also his pants were halfway down, and so were the pants of a female passenger with him. in the car.
While he was driving, all right.
Now we get the booking video where he is refusing to be fingerprinted and to take a mugshot because he wants to wear a mask in the picture. And, of course, that doesn't work for the purposes of identification. This is the same reason, you know, you have to pull your mask down at TSA so they can see if the ID, your face matches the ID. So think about that in a mugshot context. And this is the conversation this police officer in Michigan had to have with this colossal D-bag representative, the duly elected Jewel Jones.
You'll get it after the fact. But come on over here. You're going to stand against
the wall. Regulation? Show me the regulation where it says I don't have to wear a mask in the picture.
I've been more than accommodating. And at this point,
hey, and I appreciate it.
Then why are you being difficult, man?
Just show,
it's a picture.
Hey,
I got to take it. You know I got to
take it. I don't have to wear the mask So show me in y'all stuff where it says I have to wear a mask in my pictures. I know it's not in there. So I just want to hear it.
You're right, because you can't wear a mask in the picture.
So I want to see it.
So I'm not showing you anything. We're beyond this point. Okay? We're beyond this point.
We're not.
Yeah, because now you're not complying with orders, so now you're changing the demeanor of this place, right?
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
I said no.
I'm not showing you this.
The governor literally says we have to wear masks.
Believe me, the governor knows about this right now.
They know about this.
Yeah, and everything is being recorded.
You called Gretchen.
No, Gretchen called us, bud.
She called you?
Yeah, so you better start complying before Gretch finds out, bud. Even worse, because guess what?
You know what? Big Gretch is the homie.
Okay.
When she finds out about this, she might be a little upset about the treatment. So I'm finding out because she's very serious
about
the pandemic.
Oh, I don't think she has to worry about that.
She's very serious about the pandemic. So I'm just wondering, can I wear the mask?
You cannot wear the mask while you're getting your picture taken because I can't take a picture.
Can you show me where that's...
I'm not showing you anything.
Show me where
it's codified. Listen, man. This is the last time I'm asking you. The next time I'm telling you, and after that...
You all will have to hold me over there if
I'm not holding you.
You can't find in the regulations...
Dude, I can't wait to show this to the governor.
Show it to her. If you can't find me, where it's codified, where it says I have to wear a mask, I'm not going to stand over there.
Listen.
I'll stand over there and let you all hold my arms, but I won't stand over there by myself. So, hey, so you keep getting closer. I just want to let you know. You don't have to get closer. Just let me know you all will hold my arms, and I'll stand over there and let you all hold my arms.
You're a grown man.
Huh?
You're a grown man. You
I'm
can
very
stand
grown.
There and
it's
you can
not 10 of y'all no more, okay? I just want to let y'all know.
Okay.
I'll stand over there. I'll let y'all hold my arms. If y'all say, that's what y'all got to do. But
that's
if you can't find it codified where it says I have to wear a mask when I take pictures, because I know I've taken pictures of people before.
Mm-hmm.
It's never said they have to wear a mask or not. You know why? Because the pandemic just erupted out of here.
Okay.
Right, so state law or local law.
Or we can throw you back in the cell, and then we can just wait it out.
I don't want to. Come on. This hold my arms. This hold my arms. Thank you.
We're done playing nice with you, bud.
I appreciate it.
You can stay in here until you want to comply, and guess what? You don't get arraigned until you're done. It's that simple.
Congratulations, Inkster, Michigan, for producing Jewel Jones. You must be so proud. For more on the topic of police, pleased to be joined by Ari Hoffman, associate editor and CL correspondent for the Post Millennial. Also, host of the Ari Hoffman Show on Talk Radio KVI in Seattle. Ari, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. I want to know how Big Gretch can be my homie.
I know.
Yeah. It's nice to have Big Gretch your back. You know what I mean, Ari?
That must be nice.
And I have no idea that that's how they referred to her as.
I don't know that she has any idea that they referred to her that way either. But okay. It's very Broadway-ish. So I saw in the Post-Millennial piece you wrote that 200 Seattle police officers have decided not to be police officers in Seattle anymore. That must be great news for Seattle. They're saving you the trouble of having to defund the police department.
No, actually, the Seattle City Council had the exact same opinion. They said since so many police officers are leaving, they should just take that money and reallocate it elsewhere, not find a way to get more police officers. And it's no surprise officers are leaving, because don't forget that the Seattle City Council took pictures, took selfies on the front lines with Antifa, right behind them attacking police during the riots right before the autonomous zone was formed. That's what you're dealing with here in Seattle. Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan was 100% in the camp of the autonomous zone. They spent millions of dollars keeping the rioters safe by putting in barriers and such, and only decided to take down the zone after 3 weeks and multiple murders and multiple shootings and a 250% increase in rapes, robberies, and other crime because the rioters vandalized her house. So she has no regard for the police officers, and there's a whole bunch of news outlets quoting her and how we need more police and such. She's a complete hypocrite.
But those that autonomous zone was mostly peaceful, as I understand it.
Well, you yes, mostly most... peaceful shootings.
Well, what is it like now?
The autonomous zone?
Yeah.
Or what's left of it?
Yeah.
Well, you can come to Seattle. You can explore ancient ruins of the Chaz. Yeah, probably.
Do they give tours? Are there pamphlets?
Yeah, sure. You can check it out. Wow. Yeah, I mean, they preserved all the artwork because, you know, that was so important.
Sure.
Yes.
I like now,
thank you for that.
Since Jenny Durkin has worked her way into not being able to run for re-election, will she be a docent that will show you around the ancient ruins of the Chaz zone?
I don't think she'd be welcome there. In fact, I think one of the reasons she's not running for re-election is because the left hates her as much as the right hates her. They didn't like the fact that the police were using tear gas on the rioters, and they blamed her for that. So this is the kind of thing that she has managed to alienate everybody.
Well, so how do you turn this ship around to try and attract police officers and try to keep the ones stop them from retiring?
I would say the city has to hit rock bottom, and then maybe voters will wake up. But how much more rock bottom can you get to than an autonomous zone that made international news? I mean, it was so bad that my uncle, who lives in one of the most religious neighborhoods in Israel, doesn't have a smartphone, doesn't have the internet, only gets a Yiddish newspaper. Nobody speaks Yiddish anymore. And he called me and asked if my... Well, except for Mel Brooks, right? I don't even speak Yiddish. I'm an Orthodox Jew. And he called me, and he said, so is your house inside this thing? I mean, that's how bad it was. The whole world knew this thing was going on. And people just don't realize how bad it was. I went there the day it was cleared out with a security company I work with, who was actually in there trying to help out the police as best they could. And it was like... the way you see these movies describing the end of World War II when Paris is liberated. That's what it felt like in there. The people were so thankful the police were back. So I wonder, who are these people who keep voting for these elected officials, who keep defunding the police department?
Well, that's the interesting thing. We had this conversation with a retired Seattle police officer the other day who has written a book about the Obama Foundation and its use in anti-law enforcement initiatives. And we were talking about this study that was out of Seattle University looking at residents' attitudes toward police and the fact that black residents actually have more faith in police than white residents of Seattle do. But a majority of both essentially support the police. And yet they just saw their mayor and city council give a police precinct over to the mob. They just saw a black female police chief essentially be run out of town because she opposed what the mayor and the city council were doing. And it has to be some of those same people that support police in theory are supporting those who want to defund police in practice. And I don't know how to reconcile that. And the officer we spoke to didn't really either.
Well, what happened recently was, this happened on Tuesday, two Seattle police officers, one was an officer, one was a trainee, were actually denied service at a chocolate shop here in Seattle. And unfortunately, this is happening across the country. But the person who denied them service was a white girl. And she refused to do anything for them. Now, apparently, this chain of chocolate shops has a history of this kind of stuff, social activism. And we went to their social media profiles, and they got ratioed horribly on social media. I mean, thousands of comments trashing their restaurant, saying people aren't going there again. But this is a systemic pattern of abuse towards the police officers that is the climate of Seattle. I was told that the other day a female police officer was walking past elementary school in Seattle, and there were a group of kids outside. I was shocked there were actually kids in the building, but whatever. And she was walking outside, and the kids were coming the other direction on the sidewalk, and as she walked by, they did the hands up, don't shoot, as the police officers walked, a female police officer. So this is what the kids are being taught. I've spoken in public schools before. I see the anti-police rhetoric on the walls. And mind you, this predates George Floyd. This predates any of that. They've been doing this for years. BLM was very powerful here in Seattle before it was powerful across the rest of the country. So this is nothing new. They've already brainwashed the kids.
But, I mean, we see this in Chicago, too. On the one hand, Chicago police have a pretty high standing in the minds of the electorate if you survey them narrowly on that issue. People want police in their neighborhoods. Black residents, Latino residents, white residents. People want policing, and they want equal policing. They don't want to live in violent neighborhoods. You know, what a revelation. But at the same time, they vote for politicians. Those same people are voting for politicians that want to defund police, defang police, end foot chases, turn over police precincts to the mob, as happened in Seattle. It's just, I guess it's like a, you know, I want to be down with the struggle, but I don't want the consequences of being down with the struggle.
There's a council member here in Seattle named Lisa Herbold, and she is a perfect example of what you're talking about. She's one of the people who's been leading the charge for years on defunding the police, and yet last year a rock came through her window, and of course she called the police. A broken down RV appeared in front of her house, and she tried to have me arrested, thinking it was a political stunt that I dropped it there, because she was worried that it was one of these homeless RVs around town. Oh, yeah, this was like the whole thing. But, I mean, she calls the police, like it's going to have style. She called the police chief to try to have me arrested, and this is the woman who's trying to defund the police. So the hypocrisy is on full display here in Seattle.
Well, who did it? It wasn't you.
No, it was a homeless family that just dropped the thing there. And they had That's no what idea. Happened. Yeah. No, they assumed it was me, because the day before I had said that, you know what, if people really want to make an impression, they should start dropping RVs in front of council members' houses so they know what it's like for the rest of us who have to deal with this. So, of course, they thought it was me. But the funniest part of the story was it was actually a Jewish holiday that day. I was completely offline. So I come out of the holiday, I check my phone, and there's hundreds of missed calls from every media outlet in Seattle asking if I was the one who did it.
Oh, my gosh. That's
Talk funny. Show hosts always get blamed, Ari.
Yeah.
We always
get blamed. Shock jock.
Always. Ari Hoffman, associate editor and Seattle correspondent for the Post-Millennial, host of the Ari Hoffman Show on Talk Radio KVI in Seattle. Ari, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
It was nice meeting you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's morning answer on AM 560. The answer.
Open mic. Open mic Friday. Call in now.
Three 1 2 6 4 2 5 6 0 0 turnkey.pro answer line. It is Open Mic Friday, taking your calls with comments, compliments, criticisms, crack pottery. We'll take it all. Speaking of crack pottery, not everything that happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, it turns out. Las Vegas newsanchor Feven K is her name. Arrested after being found passed out behind the wheel of her car, totally naked and reeking of booze. Now, who hasn't been there in Vegas? However,
she's an anchor there.
Yeah,
the news station. Well, wait, where did her clothes go?
She had no idea how she got totally naked and reeking of booze in her Audi.
She got roofied.
Sure.
I'm going with that.
Many of you have, this sounds like something that you might have said once upon a time.
What?
Many of you have noticed I've been off air for a few weeks. And to all of you reached out, a sincere thank you for your concern.
Aww.
Last month, I was arrested by Metro for driving under the influence. At the time of the arrest, I was inside a parked vehicle in a Las Vegas neighborhood alone and naked. Slapped with a reckless driving charge since misdemeanor, reckless driving. As I move forward, I want you to know I've learned from this and I will continue learning. Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you're going to continue learning. You know, when you embarrass yourself and everybody's done something embarrassing, why don't you say, you know what? I'm an idiot. I did something really, forget this. Like I've learned and I'm learning
I'm growing,
and I'm going through.
I'm
going
to be a better person.
Yeah. I mean, I'm healing. Just say, I'm a goof. I am an idiot. What I did was stupid. I apologize. Moving on. Thank
Forgive
you.
Me or don't. Yes.
Yes. Good grief. All right, a couple calls here. Rich in Indian Head Park.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. Dan, happy belated birthday.
Oh, thank you.
The question that I have is, you need to explain something to me. I've been vaccinated. My wife's been vaccinated. My kids have been vaccinated. And what I'm hearing is that if we're in the same room together, but from different households, that we should still wear a mask. That's what Biden said on an interview with Mel on the Today Show.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Why would we get vaccinated then if we can't, you know, be in the same room with each other if we're all vaccinated? Doesn't make sense.
Just live your life.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Rich.
Nothing makes sense.
You've said it all.
Right, yeah, there. That was perfect.
Yeah, really, the answer is obvious. Anything that runs counter to common sense, then you've nailed it. Tom in Palos Heights.
Good morning, Dan. Just to try to keep the levity going, I was wondering on the speech that our president gave this past Tuesday and the state of his mind. And one of the things that I caught right at the beginning there, he was recognizing the two women sitting behind him. And then he looked up in the balcony there, and he said, and I also want to state that the First Lady is present and with her husband.
No, he said I'm her husband. Yeah, he said I'm her husband.
Oh, did he? I'm sorry. I will stand corrected.
Yeah,
I will have to. Okay.
Yeah, no, it was thanks for the call, time. It's a lovely moment. It's not canned. It's not something that he says every time he introduces
every
Jill Biden.
Time. I'm with her. She's not with me. Yeah,
Grandpa.
Look at these two ladies behind me.
Grandpa,
first time this has ever happened.
Grandpa, stop. Grandpa, stop.
Over here, Grandpa. Grandpa, come this way.
Nation in Aurora.
Hi, how are you?
Hello.
Anyway, Dan, happy belated birthday.
Oh, thank you so much.
Hi, and Amy, I still have my high lizard. He's getting big, so he'll be on the ground soon.
Okay.
And I'll be riding him out if they come at me with that vaccine. But my main point was, why are we wearing a hijab or burqa? That was the communistic mandate for those women in the Middle East. It was nothing religious, and that was a communistic mandate. And they have adopted it for us, but I wear mine under my chin to cover up the wrinkles. I'm getting older.
Oh, that's a good idea. Right, yeah, no Botox for you, just a chin mask.
There you go.
I like it.
A little lift. Jeff in Dundee.
Dan and Amy, say, listen, earlier this week, you had a news piece about a woman that and her FOID card, and she sued the state of Illinois, and the circuit court ruled in her favor that she didn't need.
Yeah.
What's happening on that? What's happening on that?
Don't get too excited. There have been circuit court judges downstate that have ruled a FOID card unconstitutional before. It won't survive on appeal with the court system in this state. So I wouldn't spend a lot of time. I mean, you know.
What about the concealed carry license? I mean, I don't really don't like the idea that we have to pay money to the state for the right to exercise a right that's written into the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah.
No, that's
my opinion.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Well, the important development on 2A, or the important case on 2A rights, is the New York case that the Supreme Court agreed to hear next term. So you want to pay attention to the Supreme Court's ruling next year, next term on that case. Noel in Dyer, Indiana.
Yeah, hi, Dan and Amy. Good morning. Last weekend, as an Indiana resident, I went down to Effingham, Illinois to do some fishing with my son-in-law and family. And in order to get a fishing license in Illinois, I had to insert my Social Security number into the computer at Walmart. What's that all about?
Oh, that's none of their business.
We want to make sure you're not catching more than your fair share, I guess, in Effingham. Noel, thanks for the call. I don't know. I've never gotten a fishing license. I fished in Illinois, but I've never gotten a fishing license.
I got a fishing license in Wisconsin, but I didn't plug in my Social Security number. Are you kidding me? In Michigan, you don't have to do that. I'd be careful there.
They like to keep track of everything you're doing here in Illinois, even fishing. Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Good morning, Amy and Dan. Thanks for taking my call. Good discussion this week on vaccinations with your callers. I'll take note that I've been vaccinated, and I don't believe in the craziness or conspiracy that follows. But long before you were born, and many of your listeners may not recall the TV series Science Fiction Theater, I was just a preteen when it aired and had a interest in the program, having interest in science and engineering. This week, I happened to surf onto an episode going all the way back to July 1956. It was called The End of Tomorrow, and it's available on YouTube. The episode began with a mysterious German scientist arriving at a medical research facility offering a vaccine to cure all viruses. Researchers verified this miracle cure, and soon efforts were completed to vaccinate all of humanity. Still, yes. Two researchers questioned the use of this vaccine because they found a disastrous side effect. Seems that women of childbearing age would not conceive any females. Therefore, after several generations, all males would disappear, and 100 years from now, no more humans would be in yeah. existence.
Right.
This mysterious scientist was found to not to be of this earth. He disappeared. The vaccination stopped, and the host of the series offered, "This is science fiction, but think about it, how easy it would be to destroy all of mankind using a vaccine."
I'm glad you got vaccinated,
Bob. Have a good weekend.
Okay, jeez. Bob, thanks for that recap. By the way, the last 20 years, though, before humankind was extinct, when it was all men, they really had a nice time.
Oh, stop it. The place was lovely. No nagging, biatching.
Speaking of the Germans, yes. by the way, too, did you see that the German Domestic Intelligence Service said Wednesday it's starting to surveil members of the what they term a coronavirus denier movement because they pose a risk of undermining the state.
Oh, God.
So look forward to, along with your fishing license, your Social Security number there, look forward to domestic spies in Illinois for anybody who is deemed a COVID denier, which, as you know, means just asking questions or disagreeing with something that doesn't comport with common sense.
Real quick, my new pastime, because, you know, I was so gung-ho on getting the flag to full staff. Now, any place where the flag is still at half staff, I call them. I've called funeral homes, banks, schools, fire stations, and park districts. I don't tell them who I am. I said, I'm just letting you know that mandate ended April 17th, so you can raise your flag up now. And they all complied, because I've driven by the places, and they've all done it.
Hmm. So,
yeah. Because people are, people aren't stupid, they're just ill-informed. They don't know. You know, they just go along to get along. Well, they didn't pay attention when he said, you know, raise the flag. No one paid attention to Jelly Belly when he said that.
You're living a life of quiet desperation, aren't you? That's your new pastime. I'm not saying you're wrong.
No, I don't purposely drive by, but if I see a place where the flag is at half staff, I just call the establishment and let them know, hey, it, you know, he lifted that, so now you can raise your flag.
Do you think you're starting to lose it a little bit?
I think it's wonderful. It's patriotic.
Yeah.
Come on.
No, okay.
It was ridiculous to do that in the first place for COVID deaths when we have 675,000 people who die a year in America from heart disease.
Just asking questions.
All right, fine.
Heather in God's country.
Hi, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Morning.
I just was wondering, Dan, I listen to you guys every morning, usually on the podcast because I'm up with my kids early, but... I was wondering, Dan, if you would define for me what a serious person is. And because I'm just curious, as I interact with liberals in the world and people that I think that lack common sense, I just was curious what your definition of is that. Thanks for answering my question.
All right. Thanks, Heather. I mean, when I talk about serious person in the context of debates or conversation, dialogue, I'm just talking about somebody who presents a logical case that is evidence-based, regardless of the topic. Somebody who doesn't just make an emotional appeal. The emotional appeal is the province of the sentimentalist, the barbarian, really. Sentimentality leads to the gas chamber, Flannery O'Connor. And so, substantive case, 2 feet firmly planted on terra firma, and you can make a case for a particular position or a particular policy, logically and with some basis in evidence, right? So you can have a back and forth. Principle, policy, data, anecdote, something that animates your position that is substantive. So you can have a back and forth. If it's just name calling and emoting, that is not a serious person. That is not an adult. That is a barbarian. That is somebody who's uncivilized, literally. Monica and Lyle.
Hi, I was going to say, you know, I compare what's going on with the cops and the minority communities in this country with the Arab-Israeli conflict. You know, it's just like if the Jews just go away, life in the Middle East will just be peachy keen for all those Palestinians and the Arabs and the Persians in that world. And nobody wants to talk about the corruption within their own society. The closest we came to any sort of reform, if you want to call it that, was the Arab Spring. We saw how that was quashed. So, you know, it's the same thing here. Everybody wants to talk about the cops and the corruption of the cops with minorities, but nobody wants to deal with the corruption within their own communities and how it's disintegrating before their own eyes.
Thanks for the call, Monica. John in Evanston.
Dan, Amy, pleasure to talk to you guys again, and happy Friday, as happy as it can get. I just finally had my wife and I had a long conversation. We're finally leaving the state, and I'm very torn about it because
the reparations are coming because you want to you're gonna get in on your reparations.
I want my kids to go to school to actually learn the three R's and not learn about social justice and have it forced down their throats. My concern is any red state I go to already has huge influxes of blue state transplants. So Florida is out. Texas is out.
No.
Florida should be in.
I'm scared to death because, honestly, it's worse. It's this mindset that spreads more strongly than coronavirus. And I'm afraid that if we give up all of these blue states and just walk away from them, I mean, is there any fix for Illinois? Probably not. But what happens when that mindset and these people fleeing those states bring that same mentality and ruin the states they flee to?
Yeah, I mean, look, John, thanks for the call. I hear what you're saying, but understand something, too. Yes, because people are fleeing a state like Illinois for Tennessee and Texas and Florida. I mean, you know, it's not just leftists in Illinois. There's a lot of conservatives. There's a lot of sensible center-right people. Of the 13 million people in the state, it's just not a majority anymore. So when they flee, you're having a lot of people who think like you do, think like I do, that are relocating to Florida and Texas and Tennessee and Arizona and elsewhere. So just because you're coming from a blue state doesn't mean you have the blue state mentality. Maybe you're fleeing it. Now, I'm not saying that you'd be blithely ignorant to who's coming and what impact they have on your politics. I think you want to guard that very closely. And actually, I see a lot of that in Florida, where people are pretty vociferous when they find out you're from Chicago or New York. We're happy you're here, but don't bring your politics here. I'm like, hey, that's why I left. All right.
That's what I tell people.
And so
you know who I voted for.
Yeah. So I actually think Florida, I think a lot of these red states are getting redder. Florida at the top of that list, despite or in part because of the influx of people from blue states, because they're blue state, center-right, commonsensical type people. Bill in Waukegan.
Hey, I just wanted to say that I was really blessed. I mean, I felt really honored to listen to what the senator said yesterday in the rebuttal after the president's speech. And I just wanted to say to everybody that I was very touched by his compassion and his words. And that, I tell you, it was one of those things where I just completely believe that man is in for better and greater things. And I hope everybody else sees that and backs him up in 2024. Thank you.
All right.
Love you guys.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Tim Scott, Senator Tim Scott. Yes. Chuck and Delavan to close us out.
Hey, you were talking about a famous Venezuelan earlier. And the only one I knew about was Evita Peron. I wish I would have lived back there. I would have put a baby in her. Hey, I wasn't on the show last week at the end because I had to go get my skin cancer checked. And they said I'm fine. Uh-huh. And I can wear my Daisy Dukes as long as I put sunscreen on.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Chuck, and for ending the week colorfully as per usual.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.